listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
I am Paul Strolley, and unfortunately, Mr. Sterling can't join us today as he is the featured guest at an awards banquet for the National Society of Those Dedicated to the Resurrection of the Finger Bowl. So he won't be able to make it here today.
He
is. But in his place, we have a man who the LA Times once called sufficient. Chris the Mick Meehan is with us. Give it up for Chris.
Yes. Yeah, born to win, taught to lose. That's right. I remember I used to play high school basketball. Everyone would chant, oh, and 10, do it again.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
what is that? Born to win? What is it?
Born to win, taught to lose.
Oh, really? Yeah. Is that a Catholic thing?
I don't know what it is. It's a mean thing.
Is it?
I'm just great. I'm standing in or sitting in for Michael.
You're sitting in for the man with the cashmere vocal cords.
Yeah,
yeah.
I know. I think mine are pretty good. Hi, this is Michael.
It's just that if you want to deliver a couple of lines like Michael, feel free to.
Hi, this is Michael.
And just when you do that, make sure you're reprimanding me, because that's when you usually get it. You get the FMD. Yeah. Oh, Paul.
Paul,
on the radio.
Paul, you just woke me up out of a slumber. Paul, we all know. You want to tell the truth? You just turned my mic down, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah,
I did.
We all know. He's out with the... We need to tell the truth with the self-tanning accident. It's a mess.
Is that why Michael's not here? It was a self-tanning accident?
Rumor has it.
Yeah, well.
He can jump in the pool. The chlorine takes care of it. He doesn't know that yet.
We don't want to talk about
yeah.
that. We would, however, like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
And we'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. State of the Arts is grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to the live arts calendar featured on this show each and every week.
I think I need to say arts more in that. I don't think we said arts enough.
Arts, yeah. Michael would have done it better.
We are joined actually by three guests today in studio. As mentioned, we have actor, writer, and recent parolee Chris Meehan, who is sitting in for the busiest man in showbiz, Michael Sterling. And later in the hour, we'll be chatting with a young man who is no stranger to the spotlight. He is most well known for his rendition of the Barry Manilow hit Copacabana on the fifth season of the pop culture phenomenon American Idol. Since the show, he's gone on to have a successful career in the cabaret circuit in various venues throughout the United States, with an upcoming performance at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal. Bobby Bennett will join us at about half past the hour. We're happy to have him. We'll throw some applause his way.
Yeah, Bobby.
But right now, Chris, tell him who we got on the phone.
All right. Well, hey, today's first guest has been an actor, writer, director, and producer, and one hell of a guy in Chicago for over 25 years.
Chicago.
Yeah. He has performed at the Goodman Theater.
Lie. Never. He never did.
He didn't?
No, no, just keep reading it.
There you go. Oak Park Festival, was he there?
Yes, he was.
Security guard?
Yes.
Next Theater.
Parked cars.
The Shaunakee and the CT20 Ensemble, where he served as artistic director.
And fluffer.
Yeah. Yes. There we go. He has directed at Shaunakee, City Light. Lit?
Yes.
Is it what?
City Lit.
City Lit. Thank you. There we go. Born to Win, Taught to Lose. CT20, Oak Park Festival, and many others, and has been nominated for 3 Joseph Jeffersons Award for his directing work. As a writer, he has 2 published plays, adaptations from Thomas... What? What'd you write here, Paul?
Adaptation of Thomas Haywood's Fair Maid of the West.
Thank you. And Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes, The Sign of the 4. Both plays are available through Dramatic Publishing.
That's right. And today he's discussing his first novel, co-written with Ron Fox, Confessions of a Transylvanian, a story of sex, drugs, and Rocky Horror, which is available in both Kindle and trade paperback today. That's right. Today it's available. So hang on just 1 second. This odd fellow tugging at my sleeve here. Hang on. I'm sorry about this. Hang on 1 second.
Master.
Yes.
Master.
Yes.
We have a visitor.
Yes, I know that. I'm introducing him right now, okay? Jeez, these people that bother me. Anyway, calling from the garden spot of the world, Chicago, USA, please welcome the man, the legend, Kevin Tice.
Yo!
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hey, how are you, buddy?
It's great. This is a tremendous honor. I have always wanted to talk to Michael Sterling, and finally my dream is coming true.
Yes.
Right here.
Well, we told Michael that it was about Rocky Horror, and he said, no way in holy hell am I going to host that show.
Well, so, I've always hated that guy anyway, so let's move on.
Let's just move on.
He's dead to me.
It's really fascinating, Kevin, because I was talking to Chris before the show, and we were talking about just the, to just jump right into it, the longevity of Rocky Horror, because it was, what, 1975 it came out?
Yeah, that's right. It's coming up on 40 years, and it's been about 35 years since they started doing the live callbacks and the crazy cast in front of the movie screen, and it was a one-of-a-kind thing then. It's sort of a one-of-a-kind thing now. There's very few films. They do it with Shock Treatment, too, which is sort of the sequel to Rocky Horror, but this is the it was a one-of-a-kind thing. They started doing this live show in front of a movie screen on Friday and Saturday nights, every night at midnight, starting in like 1977 or so, and it's still going strong. There are still casts all over the country. It's an amazing piece of American cultural history, and so, I was proud to be a part of it for a while back in the early 80s.
It really was. So it was a couple of years after the initial thing for that sort of following of, you know, throwing the toast and the water and the spraying the water pistols and all that.
Yeah, I mean, as you can imagine, anybody who's ever seen the movie, you can imagine what the kind of a reception it got when it first hit the movie theaters. Everybody just went, what the hell is this?
You know,
it was just ridiculous and over the top, and nobody knew what to do with it. It didn't do very well, you know, because everybody said, This is just ridiculous. And about 2 years later, it started doing the midnight movie circuit. And at the Waverly Theater in New York, they started calling back at the screen. They thought that was hilarious, and it was. And then people started showing up in costume, and they started performing it. And pretty soon, it started to spread all over the country. And eventually, it got to South Florida. And I ended up doing the show for about 2 years myself when I was in the last 2 years of high school. And this is what the book is about, Confessions of a Transylvanian. It's about the 2 years that I did the Rocky Horror Show live. Nowadays they call it a shadow cast, but back then we just called it a cast. but we did the show in front of the screen for 2 years, and it was one of the most amazing experiences of my life. And so my old Brad, my buddy Ron Fox, and I decided to sit down and write this book.
Yeah, no, and I want to make sure that we call him out, that he was the co-author on that. I've decided, Kevin, that rather than ask you how all of this happened and how it came about, I'm just going to keep playing this sound bite. So if you hear this, just respond to it, okay?
How did it happen? How did it happen?
There you go.
That's great.
So anyway, Kevin, as I was saying,
how did it happen?
Well, we Ron actually had been after me for years to write about our experiences back then, and initially we didn't think it was going to be published or anything like that. We were just writing as sort of a love letter to our old castmates who we kept in touch with for the last, I'm going to say this really slowly, 30 years ago when they started doing this. It's been 30 years. But then eventually when we actually got it down on paper, it not only amounted to 300-plus pages of ridiculous stories and tales of what it was like to do the Rocky Show, but we thought it might actually have a broader appeal, that we might have something in common with other casts and that people might actually identify with this. And so after we got it published, the first thing we did was we sent preview copies out to any cast member in the country that had any cast manager of any live Rocky show that's currently performing right now. If they contacted us, they would get a free copy. And we just wanted to hear their thoughts. We wanted to know if they thought we were accurate and if they had any corrections to make, if we messed up any of the costume descriptions or anything like that. And the response has just been overwhelming. We've heard from a couple dozen cast managers across the country who've read the book, and they just are really very, very flattering in their praise of the book, and they've been dry. We put their reviews up on our website. We're at rockyconfessions.com.
Yeah, I want to throw that out there to people. It's rockyconfessions.com, and also you have a facebook.com/confessions of a Transylvanian.
Right.
But no, I was reading your website earlier today, and there are a lot. The praise is just, you know, just wonderful coming, especially from those people, because they have to be the hardest audience, don't you think?
Absolutely. In fact, we did get some of the costume stuff wrong in the initial thing, and boy, they came down on us like a ton of bricks. They're like, excuse me, the stripes on Columbia's shorts are not horizontal, they're vertical. Get it right. You know?
Wow.
Like, oh, geez, okay,
wow.
Fine, sorry, we fixed that right away. But they weren't kidding around. They weren't joking. They were dead serious. They were like, look, If you want any measure of authenticity, you better fix that right now. And I'm like, okay, okay.
Well, you know what I would have said to them? I would have said,
how did it happen?
Hey, Chris, but were you ever involved in Rocky Horror growing up, or is that like before your time? Did you ever take part?
I mean, I knew of it.
You know of it.
My brother, you know, I'm the last of eight Kev, so I have my brothers were, you know, they would go to it, but no.
Really?
But
have you ever seen the film?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Okay.
Question though, Kevin, we were talking earlier, Paul and I, about Stage Fright, and this seems like a show where you were just amped that the crowds were going to love it. It was just like a giant party. Did anybody ever have any type of stage fright?
Oh, Kevin, can I take point on that? Because I want to read from the back of the book.
Oh.
But
yeah.
you tell it, and then I'll follow it up, because the question's for you. But I'll follow it up with the back of the book, because you'd obviously tell it better.
Well, in fact, it was absolutely terrifying, because when I joined the cast, and anybody could join, they didn't have when the cast got full, they may have a sign-up sheet, but they didn't make you audition. And that was kind of the point of the thing, was anybody could join. And it was a very welcoming atmosphere. And when I joined, it was very early on in the run at this particular theater. I thought, oh, this is great. They're going to tell us what to do. They're going to give us our blocking. You know, we'll have some rehearsals, and then we'll go up and we'll do the movie. None of which occurred. You showed up at the theater that night, you got in your costume, and they said, okay, have fun. And they literally just pushed you out on the stage, and you had to figure out what the hell was going on. And it was just knee-knocking terrified, because you just had to basically follow. You had to figure out who was supposed to do what, and you followed them, and you hoped that you didn't make any kind of terrible mistake or get, you know, slapped or have somebody say, what the fuck are you doing over there?
Don't say fuck, Kevin. Whatever you do, don't say fuck.
Oh, no, I wouldn't dream of doing it on the internet. but that was it. I mean, if you were going to play one of the major characters, of course, you'd watch it for weeks, and you'd study it, and you'd rehearse it at home, and you'd play the album. And remember, and I mean, I don't mean to sound all Mr. Burns on you here, but this is back before we had DVDs and all that stuff. We couldn't watch it on YouTube. We couldn't rent the movie and practice it at home. We had to learn it twice a week, watching it on the screen, and that was it.
Oh, right, because, I mean, all you had audio, you had the album. And
we had the album, and that was it.
Yeah.
But to learn the blocking and the movement and all that stuff, you know, and it was different, no matter, you know, depending on the movie theater you worked in. You know, if you had an aisle that went up the middle of the theater, you used that. But if you didn't, you did different staging. Every single theater was different.
Oh, right.
So, you had to watch the other actors and learn their blocking, but then you had to learn what was up on the screen, and it was just crazy, you know. But it was really, truly one of the greatest experiences of my life, and I'm still friends. 30 years later, with all of the people we used to do the show with, and half of them, I'm pleased to say, flew up here to Chicago for the book launch party tonight. We're really pleased that so many of them, in support of the book, came up here so they could be at the party tonight. We're having this big party on Theater Wit here, 1229 West Belmont in Chicago. We start things off at 7 o'clock here, and we go until 10. We're selling copies of the book. It's the first time they've gone on sale.
You know what, Kevin? For people who are listening live in the Chicago area, give those stats again. Maybe you'll have some more people stop by.
We are at Theater Wit. We are 1229 West Belmont. That's between Racine and Southport. We are going to be here from 7 o'clock this evening. That's Central Time, of course, through 10 o'clock. For those of you driving from L.A., you might want to keep that in mind. And we're selling copies of the book. We're selling copies of the book. We're signing copies of the book. And we're going to do a reading as well. My Ron and I are going to get up on our hind legs and give a little reading.
Oh, that's great. Well, I want to, speaking of readings, and to comment on the question that Chris asked you that I actually nearly hijacked completely from you, but had the good sense to actually let the guest do the talking. I want to share this from the back of the book, because I really think this says it all in terms of just really piquing curiosity about this. This is from the cover, actually, the back cover of Confessions of a Transylvanian.
Which is beautiful, by the way.
It is.
It's gorgeous.
Moments,
do go on.
Moments before the show was to begin, I turned to Steve in a panic. Do you have a clue what to do? You know, I asked, once the movie starts. No way, said Steve, his voice shaking. I guess we just figure it out, huh? Donnie must have seen the two of us huddled off to the side, our knees knocking. Hey, listen, he said as the lights dimmed. You're going to be fine. Just find a few other Transylvanians, follow their lead, and try not to get in anyone's way. Understand? Donnie stalked away, leaving us wide-eyed with fear. By this time, the lights had faded entirely. The projector was alive. The crowd roared. And the Rocky show had begun. Confessions of a Transylvanian is a one-of-a-kind backstage look at the greatest cult movie phenomenon of all time, the live Rocky Horror Picture Show told by those who lived it. Confessions is a moving snapshot of life in a Rocky Horror cast that captures the grit, language, and teenage angst of a group of fishnet-clad performers as they explore a world where the only rule was, don't dream it, be it. So get ready to take that jump to the left and that step to the right and do the time warp again. Kevin, you have to be over the moon about the response that you've gotten just thus far, and it didn't even go on sale till today.
Yeah, that's true. It's been really remarkable. We were hoping that people would connect with it. We were hoping that our experience wasn't unique to us and that folks would be able to say, oh, yeah, that's a lot like how we did it, or, oh, my God, that's just how I felt, or things like that. Because there are a lot of stories that take place, from a bird's eye view of we were in the middle of this while it was occurring. And, right. and the story the first time that I ever went on as Riff Raff was literally this guy just walked out one night, and I was his understudy, and I'd never done it before, and I found this out 2 minutes before I was supposed to go on stage, and the next 2 hours just went by in a blur. I couldn't believe I was doing it. It was a combination of the greatest dream come true and the greatest nightmare come to reality. It was just terrifying. But what really made the experience really special for me, and I think special for a lot of people who do it, is you didn't have to be an actor. You didn't have to be, you know, a jock, or you didn't have to audition for it. You didn't have to have some specific athletic ability. This is the place where the outcasts went. You know, this is the place where you went if you had no other place to go, if you were looking for some kind of an escape. You know, there weren't a lot of cheerleaders or guys who were on, you know, head of the football team who were playing at the Rocky Show. It was a lot of the people who just were sort of lost, and some people who were gay and were looking to connect with people that were like them, and a lot of people who were not gay and were looking to connect with girls who were wearing costumes like they were wearing up on that stage. and it was really a very welcoming atmosphere. Nobody judged you there, you know, like they did. And we were all in high school at the time, and in high school there was no worse place to be if you were different, you know. And this was a real escape for a lot of people, and it meant it still does mean a great deal for folks to be able to have a place where they can go and you know, let their freak flag fly, to be themselves, and to have people say that's cool.
Do you think, Kevin, that that's the reason that Rocky has had the longevity that it has over? Because think about it. There's a lot of sort of schlocky, you know, musical films. There's a lot of movies that are, you know, sort of have that B-movie feel to them. I mean, obviously the infectious quality of the songs. They're great songs.
They're great hooks.
They're just great rock and roll songs. But do you think that's the reason it's lasted and continues to have the following that it does? Because you said these conventions and things, you've only been to a couple with the new book, but you said the interest is still there in spades.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that this is a unique kind of creation, and I don't think the people who created it necessarily knew what it was going to become in a million years. They couldn't have dreamed that it would be what it is. But, you know, it was this. I think that the reason for its longevity is exactly that. It provides people with this venue where they can literally just let their hair down, let their, you know, their secret selves show and be accepted, and you can return week after week. It's a community of people. You know, they don't call it a cult film for nothing. It is a cult. You get involved in it, and it becomes a part of you. You become a part of it. It gets into your bloodstream. And 30 years later, you know, I've been an actor and director in Chicago. I haven't done the Rocky Show in, you know, 2 decades, but it's still in my blood. It's still a part of me. It's still, you know, part of my makeup. It's how I grew up. It saved me. I was living in South Florida. You know, I know you guys out in L.A. have this wonderful cultural atmosphere but in Florida, we had nothing. We didn't have a museum, you know. We didn't have theater. We had nothing. And, you know, it was, you could go into your buddy's basement and load up the bong, or you could look for something else to do. You could look for an escape from that. And believe it or not, and this is one of the messages, I think, of the book that I hope people take away from it, is you could go to the Rocky Horror Picture Show and grow up and be safe and have a much better life as a result of it as you would if you got into almost anything else. know, it was a really safe, welcoming, wonderful environment to be involved in. And I did it for 2 years, and I wouldn't trade that for anything.
I'm curious, Chris, what did you do? Because being the colossal misfit that you are, how did you deal with that? I'm just curious, because you said you didn't see Rocky. So what did you do in order to fit in?
We would just make a sport of running from the cops.
Really?
We would rip off a local golf course and get like 600 golf balls and just get on a hill and shoot them off into the city.
That's what you would do?
Yeah, I remember.
We almost did that same thing.
You know, if one more person tells me the run from the cops golf ball story, I tell you.
We weighed the golf balls up the hill, Rocky Horror. That's a tough one.
Hey, Kev, is there a place where this doesn't work? You know what I mean? Like kind of a Dirty Dancing scenario where, like, you get the hell out of our town.
I mean, no, you know, it's funny. you'd think that it would be that way, you know what
right.
I mean? But I don't think there's some backwards Western, you know, movie house where they went, damn, you know, them Transylvanian types, they got to get the hell out here, you know, like that. You know, you take your fishnets and you hit the road, sonny. You know?
Wait a minute, Kevin. I do have a soundbite for that one.
You know, if Rocky came to town, it tended to stay, because there's people in every community that feel like an outcast, that feel like, you know, they don't have anyone they can connect to, especially in places like that, you know.
Right.
You know, if you're not playing football in, you know, West Texas, you know, what are you going to do? And so they would, in fact, the cast managers we've heard from have been from all over the country, not just, you know, New York and Chicago, but, you know, we've heard from people from small towns and places, you know, there's a lot of people coming up here from Hobart, Indiana, and I'm not saying Hobart is West Texas, but it's not exactly, you know, Manhattan either, and they have a Rocky show that they do there, you know, every weekend, and they're terrific. I met a bunch of folks from that cast, and that's the Help Me Mommy cast, actually, and a bunch of them are coming up here tonight, and I can't wait to meet them.
You know, that's just, I mean, hearing you say that, Kevin, it occurred to me that it's almost like Rocky would be more treasured in the small town, because if you grew up in Chicago or in New York or in San Francisco, you know, you have a cultural option. You have, just by virtue of the fact that there's so many people, you have the likelihood of hooking up with people that share your interests, or the fact that you're a misfit and don't, you know, fit exactly the norms of the time. You know, that would... you know, you'd just be more likely to find kinship in the larger cities. But the fact that, you know, the small towns, like you were in Deerfield Beach, Florida.
That's exactly right. We didn't have any options as far as what we could do as, you know, on the weekends. I literally fell into, you know, the drug culture for a while, and I could have easily lost myself there. I could have, you know, that was a comfortable place to be, and it numbed you out, and it took away any anxiety you had. But I found a different way to go, and it saved me. I talk about it in the book, is the fact that the Rocky Horror Show saved me, and it saved. I'm not alone. There's a lot of people who feel that way.
It
brought them out of something that they couldn't quite deal with.
Well, it not only saved you, but it also gave us this great book that I'm very, very excited to read. I've just looked at a couple of chapters, but I'm tearing through it like salted peanuts, as they say. It's really, really going well. Kevin, thank you so much. We're out of time.
No.
And I know that you have a book reading that you're right there at the theater, and you probably have a million plates spinning. But once again, the book... the website for the book, rockyconfessions.com, the Facebook, facebook.com, Confessions of a Transylvanian, and that is also the title of the book, Confessions of a Transylvanian, A Story of Sex, Drugs, and Rocky Horror by Kevin Tice and Ron Fox. And Kevin, just so happy for you, and delighted to have you on the show.
Yeah, Kevin,
thank you, Paul. Thanks, Chris. It was a great pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
It's wonderful to hear in your voice. It's a wonderful slice of life. Congratulations. Enjoy.
Thanks, guys.
And have a nice evening tonight, and we will look forward to talking to you again when you're on the bestsellers list.
All right. Thanks a million, fellas.
All right.
Keep your fingers crossed.
Thanks, Kevin. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was great.
It was.
I really enjoyed talking to him.
Yeah.
He does. And I don't normally, because, you know, he really irritates me.
Yeah.
And I really didn't want to talk about that on the air.
He was so excited just hearing his voice.
No, he's a wonderful, wonderful guy. And the thing is, he's not only, I mean, this is it's a colossal accomplishment, but it's not surprising at all. Kevin is just one of these people that just when he devotes himself to something, he's right there with him. I mean, Fair Maid of the West, the adaptation that he did of Fair Maid of the West was one of the most successful shows in Chicago's history. It was just a fantastic, swashbuckling epic. And received incredibly well. And he's just a great guy, tremendous talent, and I'm really happy for him.
It's Chicago. He's having a party in Chicago. People are going to show up. There's theater. There's Chicago.
Oh, no. Chicago is just, I tell you, I miss that place.
Yeah.
Yeah. My wife is constantly trying to talk me into moving back there, and I think she's slowly winning.
Yeah.
At least for retirement. Mm-hmm. At least for retirement, yeah. We do have an arts calendar we have to do before we talk to Bobby mm-hmm. Bennett. We're going to call him shortly. But, Chris, do you mind if I kick it off?
Go for it, baby.
I will. Two happy couples plus one outrageously overhyped country home equals plenty of tension and laughter. The Nashes and the Trumans have known each other for years and have always been the best of friends, sort of. This particular weekend, getaway explodes into a no-holds-barred clash when true feelings surface. Hilarious antics ensue as the self-professed longest weekend of their lives is about to begin. The only problem with The Long Weekend by Norm Foster is its sheer volume of laughs. The Hamilton Spectre. The Long Weekend is playing at Theater 40 at Ruben Cordova Theater here in L.A. through July 1st.
With their father in a coma, the O'Dwyer family of middle-aged children return home to stay to say their goodbyes. Among them is their 37-year-old brother, Still, who still lives at home and works as a part-time clown dabbling in children's birthday parties. Sounds like me. Magic, film criticisms, and heroin. Oh, minus the heroin. Am I on the wrong page, Paul?
What?
I'm on the right page.
No, you're on the right page.
You're mocking me.
No, I'm not. I'm actually doing my logistics.
Okay, gotcha. Here. Their shattered mother, who's clinging to their Irish Catholic faith, struggles. Is this my bio? What are you guys doing?
I didn't want
to.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to spring it. I didn't mean to spring it to get on the air.
Their shadowed mother, who's clinging to her Irish faith, struggles to keep them all together, while the older brothers struggle with their own identities, marriages, and fatherhood. Come on now, man.
No, this is me.
This is me. Okay. No. I know. Their sister Alice has written a story which threatens to expose family secrets thought long buried in the past, and the memories of their dying father looms over them all. A darkly comic look at what it is to be cast adrift at any age and the means we have of holding on to each other and to fellow lost souls who appear in the night run on sentence. Thanks, Paul. That good night is presented by Road Theater Company and playing at the Lancashire Arts Center through July 21st.
Oh, you know what? Just shorten the title. Just call it The Meehans.
The Meehans.
Just call it The Meehans.
The Meehans.
Yeah.
I want to go see this. Here we go.
No. It's actually, there's a friend of mine, Chet Grissom, is in it. He's another great Chicago actor.
Chet does a lot of commercials and voice work.
Yeah, does he?
We did something at the HBO Workspace. I think now the Comedy Central Workspace.
No, he's a great guy, and it's getting really great reviews, so I would like to catch that myself.
Yeah.
For further information about any productions and or events mentioned in today's State of the Arts live calendar, visit us at stateoftheartsla.com. That's stateoftheartsla.com. We also suggest you drop into performingartslive.com, where you can search for Southern California events in several different categories happening every day of the week. So, Chris, I am going to fiddle with my computer here and type in the number to see if we can contact Mr. Bobby Bennett to talk to him about his show. But while I do that, would you give him the intro he is so aptly due?
Yeah. Okay, after a two-year absence from the cabaret concert scene here in Los Angeles, our next guest brings his critically acclaimed Smooth Sounds and... I'm murdering this. I'm so sorry.
Our next guest... the drink down, Meehan. Put it down.
It just takes the edge off, but apparently it affects my reading as well. Our next guest brings his critically acclaimed Smooth Sounds and an all-new show titled In Good Company! To Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal this Sunday, June 24th. Please welcome a man about whom Broadway World recently said is the singer of engaging texture and simple elegance. Bennett flirts with perfection. Please welcome American Idol's Bobby Bennett.
How did it happen?
Did you get Bobby on the phone? By the way, I was at the Federal on Friday.
Were you?
That is a hell of a place.
Isn't it great?
That is a great place. Yeah. The bar downstairs is great, and also just very high volume beer.
Oh, what?
I had four beers.
Really?
And they were Yeah.
What do you mean high volume beer? Do you just large beers?
Just huge. It was like, yeah, a war, no, it was a bucket actually. I had to swim out in a
Did
booth.
You?
No, it was it's a lot of booze, pretty loaded up there.
I'm going to call him while we chat just
you got
to
it.
See this set. So you'll hear a little ringing.
Fantastic beer, great atmosphere. The building's beautiful. Usually, you know, in Los Angeles it's a stucco whatever building.
No, it's the oldest building in the valley actually.
And so it was a bank.
Oh. Hello, is this Mr. Bobby Bennett? This is State of the Arts.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Hey, Bobby. How are you? Thank you so much. I want to say that I don't know if Michael filled you in, but he is unable to be here today. But we have the lovely and talented Chris Meehan here, who's going to join us on the interview today. Say hello, Chris.
Hey, Bobby. Good to hear from you.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
So, Bobby,
awesome.
In good company, this is at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal, and I always love to ask cabaret performers this, and I would be very interested to hear your response to it. How do you arrive, in cabaret style, how do you arrive at what it is you're going to sing? Like, is there a narrative? Did you just pick songs first? How'd you go about that process?
Well, the very first show I ever did was back in 2006, and I was only 19 years old, and I really didn't know how I would put a show together. I know that I'd seen many shows, I know that I'd been to concerts, but a cabaret show is much different because it's so much more intimate, so you really have to take time to talk to your audience, and
right.
There was a great performer in Denver, where I'm from, and my show was, first show was that, her name was Lanny Garrett, and she is kind of a legend of the town, and she took me under her wing. He kind of just showed me, you always come up with a theme, whether it's love songs, whether you want to do a tribute to someone, whether you want to do some songs from Broadway, but just have some kind of a theme. So I just kind of ran with that. And so I thought, any kind of a theme, and then with In Good Company, I thought, well, where can I find some of the greatest duets in popular music? And so that's how this show was born. But usually I just think of a theme that I can go with.
Oh, okay. So are there guest artists who are joining you for the duets, like different people for each song, or do you have one person who's joining you for the whole evening, or how does that work?
Well, first when I came up with the title In Good Company, I thought I was being, fabulously prolific, thinking, oh, the company can be the songs and the songwriters. And then I thought, well, why not have real company come join me. So I asked four other performers and friends that I had done shows with and that I had worked with before to come work with me. And their names are Devin Hatzell, Matthew Bellastero, Nina Jones, and John Gabriel. And I thought, well, I didn't want to do a whole night of duets, so we just kind of peppered in a few duets throughout the show and then a big group number towards the end.
Oh,
and I
okay.
think it'd be great to all get together, and I think it's lovely for an audience to watch duets, at least I was watching duets.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, it's just, it gives you an opportunity to play off of those people, and it makes for, I mean, Michael and I are sort of cut from, I don't know how you feel about it, Chris, but Michael and I are sort of cut from different cloth in terms of he's really into cabaret and just, like, even just a single performer and just, performing, for the whole evening. I really like what Bobby is describing. I like the idea of, one person is sort of the through line, but having other people there to sort of, share the load and bounce things off, that to me would be a more interesting evening than just standard cabaret.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating because it's really, out of the 10 shows, the 10 cabaret shows that I've done in the past 6 years, this is the first time I've actually shared the stage with other performers. So it's going to be, and the energy is going to be different. It's going to be fascinating to see how the audience reacts and how I react to it. So I'm really very excited for the show. I'm so excited.
I imagine that it's actually more, I don't want to say relaxing, because you're always going to have that performance energy, but it has to feel nice that the whole weight of the evening is not 100% on your shoulders. Are you finding that to be a little more relaxing going into it?
I mean, I'd love to say yes. But no, I think having other performers makes me more crazed. I start to worry about them. I want them to look their best.
And right. I got you.
Yeah.
I want them to look their best, and I want them to sound wonderful, and I want them to have enough time to shine, and I want to make sure everyone's had a fair amount. And so if I was filming a movie, in a sense, I would film all of their scenes first, and then I would use my scenes as cover sets.
Right. Yeah.
Right. They also share the green room with you. Eat your food. Drink your stuff.
That's true.
Yeah.
They do.
Well, I don't know about that.
You're not going to feed them, are you? They're performers. They don't need food.
The pacing is hard to do with all those people in the green room.
It's all about pacing.
Hey, Bobby, I wanted to ask you, too, because Chris mentioned this earlier in terms of... Chris mentioned a comment earlier about stage fright and performance anxiety, which I've suffered from in the past. And I'm always... When I get an opportunity to speak to people like you that had such a public forum, and I don't know if there is anything in the last 10 years that has more visibility than American Idol. I'm just so curious about how do you handle, what's the backstage vibe there? I mean, is it just as stressful as we all imagine it would be, or is there sort of a camaraderie among the people because they're all in the same boat together? What is that energy like?
Well, there is a camaraderie, really. I mean, for instance, let's say we had to be, because we filmed at CBS.
Right.
Let's say if we had to be at CBS by 6, and we filmed by 7, like literally on set by 7. I would say from about 8 in the morning from when we woke up to about 6 o'clock, we were fine. Everyone was friends, everyone was fine. 6:15 hits, everyone starts to kind of just, you know, oh, all right, hello, you know. 6:30 hits, it gets a little less, and then about 6:45 comes and nobody's talking to anybody.
Yeah.
People are kind of in their own corner.
Right.
I was always kind of had to go take a moment by myself and didn't like to be talked to, didn't want to be bothered. And everyone just kind of puts their game face on. So it's intense, and you try not to think about the fact that 42 million people are about to watch what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And it's very overwhelming. But the camaraderie, yes, most of the day, and then once it's, I'd say about 15 minutes before showtime, it's game faces.
Wow. No, I just...
And see, terrifying.
Well, that's a reason that... that's how I know I have anxiety disorder, because that whole thing he was describing at 6 o'clock, that would be me at 8:15 that morning.
Yeah.
You say, that's...
Well, I'm already nervous about Sunday, so I know how you feel.
You're going to be great. Was there ever a malfunction on the on American Idol? As far I did Last Comic Standing, and we were 20 seconds into a 3-minute set, and they had to reset the sound, so there was a live audience, and you know, it was hard to revamp. Did anything like that happen to anybody on the show?
There's always something. A lot of stuff happened during sound check, which they also gave a rough sound check to be a great performance. But sound check was rough. I remember a lot of people forgetting lyrics. That was a huge thing, forgetting lyrics and not being able to hear ourselves, because the monitors you have are not... You don't get earbud monitors till much later in the competition, and then the monitors that they set you are underneath the stage itself, and then there's holes in the stage that you hear the sound from. And I don't know about other performers, but I couldn't hear anything.
Yeah.
So I had to do my sound a million times because I couldn't hear anything. I mean, I like a monitor right in front of me, you know, turned up to the highest it can be.
Yeah.
Right.
And so that was a huge thing. And, you know, someone always has a little breakdown before you go on. There's always some kind of drama.
There is. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, before I forget, Bobby, I want to put the information out there for the show. The show is Bobby Bennett in Good Company. This is this coming Sunday, June 24th, at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal. The number for tickets is 818-754-8700. That's 818-754-8700. And reservations are... Well, they're required, actually, because they got to know who's coming. Michael has those tables set up just beautifully there. And as Chris was saying, it's just a great, great new venue for Michael and his efforts, having left Vitello's and moved on to bigger and better things at the Federal. So, Bobby, we're delighted to have you on the air. Thank you so much for joining us. We're very grateful. And do you have a website or something for yourself personally that you can throw out there?
Well, thank you for having me, first off. But as far as the website, I think the only thing left that I have is probably a MySpace or my own Facebook. So, you know, you can just search Bobby Bennett on either of those. Because
There's
music on MySpace, and then Facebook is my own.
But more importantly, rather than finding you on the web, we want them to find you live. So once again, 818-754-8700 for tickets, and that is at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal, Sunday, June 24th. Showtime is 7, but I believe that you have that dinner thing from 5:30 to 6:30. Isn't that correct? Is that the meal beforehand?
Yes.
Is that what it is? Okay. But they'll get all that when they call for information. So it's also the website, msapr.net. That's msapr.net. Bobby, thank you so much for joining us. We're really grateful to have you on, and we wish you the best of luck at your show.
Oh, Chris, Paul, thank you so much, and I hope everyone comes to see the show.
Yeah, as do we. Thank you so much, Bobby. Nice talking to you.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
You got it, buddy.
I met Bobby at the last thing that Michael did when he did the, not this past year, but LA's Next Great Stage Star, where he performed at. And just a sweet kid. Really, really nice. And as you saw, just, you know, completely.
He's 20 now or 21?
Yeah, well, he said he was, well, 2006, he was 19.
Okay, gotcha.
So
I should be able
didn't
to
want to throw you with math.
Yeah.
But, Chris, I'm glad we have some time left over because I did want to talk to you about that. You said that you have a – is it a book you're reading that was about stage fright?
There's a guy, Mick Berry. He has a book called Stage Fright, and he went around and he just interviewed performers, amateur or people that weren't so famous and famous people. And a lot of it had to do with cognitive behavior therapy. But what is the worst thing that can happen, and can you survive it? You know, and people have stage fright. They think the world is going to end. Yeah, I think David Brenner talks about doing a set, and he thought people were going to wait for him in the alleyway to beat him up because his set was so bad.
Right.
Of course, he walked home, and no one jumped out of the bushes. There was no boogeyman.
Right.
But there's an interesting story with Olympia Dukakis at the West End Theater. She had a one-woman show, and no understudy. And the worst thing happened. She went out there, she started the show, and she forgot every single line. Sold out crowd. And she just walked off stage. And she said it was horrible. Stage manager walked up to her, said, "Don't worry, take a breath. I'll feed you the lines from the wings." And, you know, they did that for a few lines, and then she just had a great show. The crowd erupted. You know, I mean, they just loved her. They love because she did this. And so the very worst thing that could happen to a performer ended up being one of the best things. It's just a human thing, you know?
You know, because that's one of the things when you have anxiety disorder, it's called what-ifing yourself to death.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that starts the spiral of anxiety is, well, what if this happens? What if this happens? What if this happens? And sometimes the best thing that can happen is the thing you're most afraid of, because then you realize, hey, I survived it, you know.
Yep.
Because, you know, our imaginations create just, my heart's going to explode at the top of my head's going to come off, you know.
Yeah.
Did you ever have any issues with that?
I still have it. I have a lot of stage fright all the
time. Oh, do you?
Yeah.
I never would have known.
Yeah, I'm actually, today I have stage fright. I'm wearing a diaper.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, but you're wearing a diaper because it's Monday.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It's Monday. It's diaper day.
Right.
I have a lot of stage fright.
Odd that you'd wear it on your head, though. I think that's a little unusual.
Most of it's because I'm never prepared.
Really?
You know? So I don't know what's going to happen.
Never prepared.
But, you know, I read something. There's the 15, 40, 60 rule. At 15, you think everybody's thinking about you all the time. At 40, you don't give a crap what anybody's thinking. And when you're 60, you realize no one's been thinking about you at all. You know what I mean?
Right.
Nobody's walking around thinking, you know, when me and goofed up that time in 2001, you know, where's my drink? Do I have a parking ticket? No one, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but that's one of the things of, you know, you need a certain amount of ego to get up there in the first place. So
yeah.
I think that's one of the byproducts of that ego, is that you really think that it matters as much to the people in the audience as it does to you. I mean, it does to a certain extent in that you're there to entertain them.
Right.
You know, but did you ever think about doing something? Because I always thought the way to cure something like that is just to stare down the dragon. I don't think there's anything more terrifying than a one-person show.
Well, you did. I mean, is that really the reason why you did your one-man show, is to overcome this?
It was sort of that. Yeah, it was sort of that. But part of it, in all honesty, was just because I wasn't getting enough work in other ways, and I just created my own by writing that. But it was also sort of kind of hoping to stare down the dragon. But I, interestingly enough, the anxiety attacks that I used to have, I never had them. They were never performance related.
Yeah.
They were always like, it would sneak up on you when you're doing a seemingly mundane thing.
Right.
When you're performing, you have something to focus on. You have something to occupy your mind.
Yeah.
It's the downtime that you you know, the quiet time when it would really rear its ugly head.
You know, also, training helps too. I remember.
And bourbon helps.
Well, I was going to talk about booze because I did something like that this weekend. I don't know if it was too helpful, but
what did you do?
Well, with Meisner, back to training, is the other person is your script. So if you put all your attention on somebody else, it really takes, and you just read their behavior. You know, of course, you want to know your lines, but I did a pilot presentation with these guys from Comedy Central, and there's some celebrities there. It was a board game. I can't talk a lot about it, but there was a couple Emmys there. There was at least one Oscar in the room.
Okay.
And I had
The statuettes?
Yeah, just the statuette. Yeah. It was a mock-up, and there's also like a plastic trophy, World's Greatest Dad. So it wasn't much. No, you know, a little Chia head.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, no.
And they would just move them and do the characters' voices?
Yeah. So I was a little nervous, and I was going to do a man on the street the next day, so the pressure wasn't really on me, but they did have me at one of the games with some of these guys. And I never drink to perform, but I had three beers.
Really?
Everyone was hanging out. There was a big barbecue outside. We were shooting inside, and people were hanging out. And there was a lot of people who don't drink, but yeah, I had a couple cocktails. And
and how did that – did it help or hurt?
I was with a bunch of funny comedians. They were a little blue. It made me more blue. It made me more dirty. I was going dirty quicker. I kind of, you know, I mean, some of the stuff was really funny.
Right.
But
because you normally don't go there. You usually keep you know.
Clean.
No, but I mean, seriously, you don't normally.
I do. No. Yeah. I mean, there's just so much of that out there. If you can actually, but once they changed the questions for us to answer and he said, hey, can you guys keep it PG? It got funnier because we were limited.
Yeah.
And when you're limited.
Distills it.
Yeah. And you have to figure out what's going to work.
Yeah.
But how's your stage fright these days?
Oh, my stage fright is fine because, you know, I don't really have it so much anymore because I've started to do what they always suggest you should do. When I was reading about the disorder between panic attacks and anxiety disorder, is that you have to let it wash over you.
Yeah.
What really makes it go through the roof is repressing it and pressing down on it, and that's like just builds the pressure.
Yeah.
So there have been times where I've been backstage and, you know, I've had my heart's been racing and I'm sweating like crazy and just like, you know what? Just applying logic to it. Body is flooded with adrenaline right now. I'm not going to have a heart attack. Everything's going to be fine. But, you know, in the moment, you really have to sort of realize that, you know, you got to let your body go through the motions.
Yeah. I mean,
and once you get out there, once you have something to focus on, like when I was doing the solo show for as long as I did, 8:01 on, I was fine.
Right.
But you didn't want to be around me at 7:50.
Yeah.
You know, it was 7:50 to 8:00 was just like, meow, 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 take me to my happy place,
pacing back and forth.
Oh. You know, it was stressful.
Cool. Yeah.
Before I forget, we only have a couple of minutes left, but I have a sound bite that I should have played during Bobby's interview, so we're going to have Bobby Bennett play us off the air in a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
He's got a track called More Today Than Yesterday that will play us off the air, but before I forget, I wanted to sort of plug that in there. Chris, one of the things that we wrap up the show with is a little performance disaster, anything like that. Well, you didn't have a disaster this past weekend. You just got gassed before performing.
I got a little gassed.
So.
I got a little.
How many people were involved in the game?
They were shooting for 12 hours. So each crew got, there was six players at the table. It's going to be a huge thing.
It's six players at the table. So
there's a question that's asked.
Okay.
Right. I mean,
I don't want to pry too much.
Yeah, yeah. But there's a question that's asked, and you write it down, and then you read it, and you try to pick who answered it, and then you would do man on the street, and you would ask regular pedestrians what they, you know, the same questions, and some of them were the same, but then you would have like German tourists read somebody's disgusting answer. It was very funny. It's very funny. It's going to be. I mean, it's already a really big game, but and these guys were great. And everybody always says that, but this was a lot of fun. And they just had a huge party. Barbecue. It was just fantastic.
No, it sounds it. It sounds it.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, I'm happy for you.
Thanks, buddy.
We are going to wrap it up. Chris, throw your website out there so people can know where they can learn more about you.
All right. Well, ChristopherMeehan.com. MEEHAN.
And we both want to thank both of our guests. It was Bobby Bennett and Kevin Tice. Bobby's got the show at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal in good company coming Sunday, June 24th. And, of course, Kevin has the book, Confessions of a Transylvanian, A Story of Sex, Drugs, and Rocky Horror. Guitar, written by Kevin and also Ron Fox. And it was great talking to both of them. And we're going to head off the air now with a little track by Bobby Bennett. This is called More Today Than Yesterday.
Listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.